Welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for September 30th, episode 130. Today, Kyle is driving a Lucid home, like many of us would like to. Tom says he could drive a Hummer through a house. And Dominic is hurricane dodging somewhere, I think, not at home. I am Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which you can get on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you are watching us on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you're not, and hit the like button. Almost 15,000 people are tuning in every single week between the video and the audio. So make sure you hit that like button and you can show us that you are there as well. Now, let's talk a little bit about a topic on the podcast that we didn't get to last week because we put a video out whilst we were on the air. We should have a think about that because it confused things. Tom, this was your 70-mile-an-hour Hummer EV range tests. Can you tell us more details that you couldn't fill us in last week because the video had just gone live?
Yeah, so I was able to grab a Hummer EV Edition 1 out in Detroit and do the Inside EV 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. I also did some charge recordings after we were done, or I tried to do some charge recordings after we were done. The Hummer EV did exceptionally, in my opinion. It has an EPA range rating of 329 miles. That's the combined EPA range rating. I don't think they split out the highway and city, because now we're starting to not get those separated range ratings. So the combined's 329, and I was able to go 343 and probably could have gone 345. It was showing just like the Bolt EV. Unfortunately, when the Hummer EV gets down under like 10 miles of range, the estimated remaining range goes away. There's no numeric state of charge number. You just kind of have bars, and the remaining range says low and blinks low. And as the viewers here probably remember, the last time I drove a GM product on a 70-mile-an-hour highway range test, I ended up on a flatbed being towed the last mile to the DC fast charger because of that one reason. I didn't have an accurate reading on how far I have to go. And honestly, the pedal response really wasn't giving me the indicators that I usually get, where I kind of know when it feels soft, when I'm really at the end of the ride. So now I'm out in Detroit and I said, you know, I don't want to have to tow the Hummer. They probably need like a heavy truck wrecker to tow that thing. It weighs over 9,000 pounds. So I called it quits where I thought was zero. And it was zero, actually. When I plugged in to the DC fast charger, it did say it was at 0% state of charge, but it also said that there were 2 miles remaining of range. So call it a 343, call it a 345, whatever you want. And the only reason why I kind of wish I drove it a little bit further was the BMW iX in the 70-mile-an-hour range test finished up with 345, and that sits in third place all time for Inside EV's highway range test. So I think I could have matched that, but now it's the Hummer EV's in fourth place, finished up with a tremendous consumption rating of 1.6 miles per kilowatt hour, fantastically efficient vehicle. But the real numbers there, the 343.7, I think it was a good result for the Hummer EV.
Excellent. Kyle, what's your experience in the Hummer? I forget, you had it the first drive, but did you do the range test?
About to. I think I get it in a week's time. Oh, that's right. Going to do all the stuff with it. Really looking forward to just spending a whole day crab walking through my town.
And in terms of the audience, the buyers for the Hummer, like, fill me in, because it's not a vehicle we get, Kyle. Who's going to be buying this vehicle? Because it's got some serious chops in terms of, you want to put it through its paces, but will they ever?
No, very few people will ever do anything this truck's designed to do. For the most part, you're going to be seeing them with Miami CrossFitters, maybe the occasional, like, I was actually talking to a woman yesterday who drives a Hummer H3, and she was like, I love the new Hummer EV. And she's like, if someone cuts me off, I can just drive over them. And I'm like, hell yeah, that's awesome. So this is these are the types of people that are going to be buying this thing, and it's going to be total mayhem. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait for it.
And do we know, Dom, you keep an eye on the forums and the news, how many of these are actually out there in customers' hands yet? Because I'm not seeing a huge amount of videos online about it. But then again, you know, I'm comparing that to sort of the Tesla audience who everyone wants to make a video about their car. So do you know how many are out there? I think it's in the hundreds, possibly. But there we go. Okay, so in terms of your other driving impressions, Tom, not specific to the range test, anything else you want to fill us in on the Hummer?
It's just, you know, hilariously, you know, excessive, you know, is probably the best way to put it. It's just such an enormous, you know, you could barely fit in the lane. It's so wide, you know, it's crazy how wide it is. And just everybody looks at you, even, you know, your co-hosts when you're driving down the road. As we mentioned last week on the show, Dom ended up driving next to me and didn't even realize it and was taking pictures of me as I was driving down the road. Nobody believes us. You know, I've ran into a few people that are like, all right, you could tell me now. Really, you guys set that up. We did not set that up. We just ran into each other on the road. I didn't realize he was in, you know, Kyle's Model 3, which, you know, you shouldn't expect me to look at and to see who's driving a Model 3 because right. They're like Camry now. They're everywhere. But I'm putting this on Dom. Dom should have slowed down and looked, and he would have seen that it was me driving the damn thing. And although I couldn't have pulled over to hang out and talk to him because I'm in the middle of a range test, we could have at least figured out something. But that was really cool. And that's really the big takeaway, Martin. It's the vehicle if you want everybody to look at you. And a lot of people want that constant attention. So, you know, that's what you get if you got $110,000 and you want everybody to look at you. I don't think there's another vehicle on the road that for $110,000 you could just command the attention of every person near you. Now, as I mentioned on the podcast before, when I was younger, my uncle had a DeLorean and he used to give it to me to drive. That was the closest that I've ever been to this, with like everywhere I went, everybody looking at me. And unfortunately, guys, I've got to go for a few minutes.
I love it.
I have a crew of people are at my house right now upgrading my electric, and they're all calling me from downstairs. Let me punch out for a minute, and I'll be back as soon as I can.
No problem. Right. Dom, I want to talk to you about something I saw online this week. I saw a Bloomberg article, I think it was, Dom, that said Americans have always bought too much car. In the fossil era, that was too big a car. And right. In the electric era, it's because they're buying too much range. And people are buying cars with batteries bigger than they need to. Now, 200 kilowatt hour battery in this, but you need it, right, in the Hummer. On screen right now for our viewers, we're showing the various ranges of the cars that we've tested. And it's down there in fourth place, which is impressive, 343.
Right.
But like, you couldn't underbuy a Hummer. You couldn't put a 100 kilowatt hour battery in this. It wouldn't be fit for purpose.
Right. No, it needs like the huge battery in order to, because like, right, it needs a huge battery, just the size of the thing and the aerodynamic profile in order to get any sort of usable range. And then 340, what was the actual 345?
343.7, yeah.
Right. That's a great number for any car. Like, man, that makes it so much so livable. And man, I wanted to ask Tom about like his impressions, just like driving impressions. So we know what it does for range now. And I guess he's in a charge. I'm not sure if we're talking about the charging yet, but I kind of like to get his impression, just how he felt like driving it, because that to me was like, you know, kind of like the joy of the thing. It was just like, just a lot of fun, you know, but yeah, overbuying in range. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of vehicle. You know, and if hopefully people who are buying this thing aren't like struggling at all to make a payment, because that's like the wrong vehicle for you. If you're for any vehicle that you have to struggle to make the payments on, it's the wrong vehicle for you. And you know, people tend to buy as much vehicle as they can, and in the electric era, that means, you know, range, because range is super attractive. It's what we want, but you don't always need as much range as you have. As you know, we can talk about this road trip that I was just on with Kyle's Tesla Model 3 Performance. It doesn't have the greatest range. I think it's what, down to what, 230, you think, Kyle? We think.
Well, yeah, you're comparing EPA cycle versus highway driving, but yes,
right.
it's on the highway at 70, yeah, roughly 230, 240 miles of range.
Right. So, I mean, that's like, say, 100 miles less than the EPA, or no, that's the 70 mile an hour range number that Tom got. So, I mean, that's a, you could, and it's, it was very livable. It was very doable. And yeah. So you don't always need like 350 miles of range, but I mean, if you're paying $100,000 for a big truck,
but you're actually paying like a lot more than the 110 sticker price for a Hummer. No one's buying these things for sticker. Right.
Hopefully not. I mean, you might as well go all out.
They are, but they're not.
I mean, throw some options on if you're going to spend that much money, you know.
No, it's all the dealers putting $100,000 markups on them.
Oh, that too, really? Right?
Yeah, plus 100 plus. I mean, good luck finding one under 200. I think the cheapest one I've seen go for is like 180, 190.
Man,
wow.
That's a lot of money.
That is immense. We were having a chat on our team's chat this week about the BMW XM. And I was saying, you know, how much car does anybody want? You know, if you're thinking, man, I really want to buy a car, but I just don't like the Lamborghini Urus or a Bentley Bentayga. Oh, great. I've got the BMW XM. It's a plug-in hybrid, by the way, I think. So we won't talk about it on this podcast too much because it's full of fossily bits. But that's a car, again, which is just so huge. But let's talk about another big car right now, because in the news this week, I thought this is a really interesting story to crop up. And that is the famous car reviewer and automotive journalist's influencer, if you like, Doug DeMuro. He gives his vehicles that he tests a Doug score. Now, I came to Doug stuff pretty late. I wasn't aware of him or his career until more recently. And I sort of ended up doing that sort of just feasting on all of his YouTube videos over a weekend or something. And obviously, like, I was the only one in the room who didn't know who he was, because what a legend. And so he has driven the Rivian R1S, and he says the best vehicle he's ever tested in terms of the score that he gave it. Now, I want to check in. I should have checked before the show today, Kyle. Have you actually driven the R1S? Did Rivian invite you out to go drive it?
I couldn't make it, but they're actually sending one here soon. So, but love Doug. Doug is my favorite car reviewer, no secret. Big Doug fan, and I haven't watched this review, but I've heard about it because it blew up the internet, and it's awesome.
But how cool is that? That an EV is the coolest or the best, the highest ever score that he's given, you know, a vehicle. And he's been effusive with his praise about electric vehicles before. The video where he drove the Plaid, you know, it literally, like, he's driven every car out there, and he's giggling, like he's just giggling. I mean, this is a ridiculous acceleration. But in terms of someone as important as this, Kyle, you know, you make content as well online, and incredibly popular content. What does this do for electric vehicles when someone like this gives it a stamp of approval?
Yeah, I'm not sure industry-wide. I mean, I don't think it's any secret we knew this was going to score well, because he's also reviewed the R1T, and that he gave a huge score to as well. And hugely popular. And I was texting with some friends who work for Rivian. They're like, the entire company is buzzing right now. They were so pumped. So he's really lifted the whole mood at Rivian, which is great. And I think the R1S deserves it. You know, I've spent time with it. I haven't driven it. I can't imagine it drives too differently from my R1T. It's the same underpinnings.
And, sure,
yeah, it's about 14 inches shorter. And so, but same motor, same battery, all that stuff is the same as my truck. And I'm so thrilled with my vehicle. And I think it's one of the best vehicles I've ever driven. I'm glad he thinks so with that as well. Plus, the R1S looks really good in that color, I have to say. Normally, I'm not a red car guy, but that looks awesome. But overall, Doug has such a wide audience, expanding to non-car people, that it's really just like, yeah, I wonder what the order banks for R1S looked like after this video went up. It must have just been reservations through the roof.
Yeah. No, completely. And Dom, have you seen this video yet? Or what do you think someone like of his caliber does in the world of, you know, YouTube, the homepage, the algorithm, recommendations? So many, you know, petrol heads, for want of a better word, will watch something like this. And, you know, Doug is a bit of is a huge hero to so many people. Do you think they'll be thinking like, oh, maybe I need to give electric vehicles a second chance?
I mean, it can't hurt for sure. I mean, he does have a high profile, and he does a great job of reviewing vehicles. It's probably, like, they've got like a huge line of orders anyway, and I'm sure it's just it's just bigger, but they just really need to start cranking them out at this point, really, just to fill up, you know, start filling up that backlog of orders. But man, I can't wait to actually get, I haven't even driven the pickup truck yet. And I'm really anxious to this thing. The R1S looks like pretty awesome. I think with the shorter wheelbase, that's 14 inches. That's significant. That should, it should turn different. It should handle, you know, it should make a big difference, shouldn't it, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I think in daily driving, you probably won't notice it. In like hardcore driving, yes. But either way, it's going to be, everyone that I've spoken to who's driven it says it's equal, if not better, than the R1T. It's not worse. I've never heard anyone say not as good. But we'll play around with it. We'll test it. We'll run it side by side against the R1T. We'll do all the things we typically do. We'll take it off-roading. And that's really the big key of having this shorter wheelbase, is it should be a lot more capable out on the trail. Even the R1T is sometimes a little bit big just to kind of squeeze through our tight trails here. Yeah. So this should be pretty good, especially from a tight corner situation.
Now, Tom, did you get your garage sorted? Oops. Oh, there you go. Tom, did you get your garage sorted? Are they sorting out your electrics?
For now, yes. I'm sure they're going to call me again.
Good news, my
friend. And that's why I'm not recording today down in the garage, because there's like 10 people at my house.
We're talking about the Rivian R1S, which again, you've driven that, haven't you, on a short test drive?
Yeah, it wasn't that short. I was on the media drive, so I got to drive it on road and off road pretty extensively. And I mean, I wrote, if you look at my review on Inside EVs, basically the same as what Doug said. I basically, you know, came out and said, this is probably the best SUV available today, you know, hands down, regardless of the brand. Now, there are certain vehicles that might be better at specific functions, but all around, I believe this is absolutely the best SUV you could buy.
Wow. Even BMW iX, better than that?
Yeah, because it's way more off-road capable.
Sure. Oh, of course. Yeah. Okay. Right. And we were talking, Tom, about someone like him who is seen as, you know, very credible, loves petrol stuff, loves combustion, loves electric. And what that would do for the perception of electric vehicles when someone as impartial as that, I would say with no skin in the game, right? He's not selling a particular, like, we're on Inside EV. So someone could say to us, well, you guys are obviously biased. Right. Mm-hmm. So they would be right or wrong, but they could level that accusation at us. Whereas Doug, no. So do you think this does, when he puts this as the best vehicle he's driven, well, that does for electric vehicles, Tom?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I would quite honestly be surprised if he didn't say that. After driving it, I was, you know, just amazed. I'm amazed at how well the R1T drives and how capable it is. But after driving this, particularly off-road, I was like, my God, this is even better than the R1T is off-road, because it's got that shorter wheelbase. It's more maneuverable. It kind of has, you know, all the functionality of the R1T. I mean, minus a gear tunnel, but that you make up that space in the back. It's just like a better R1T. So I actually have one of these on order also. So I'm probably going to end up when that comes in, which won't be till sometime next year. I'm thinking I'll probably keep the both pickup trucks until then, and then decide which pickup truck I'm going to sell, and sell one of the trucks to buy this. And then this will probably be the wife's daily driver, and I'll just drive the pickup truck.
Okay, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about the Hyundai Kona, which is coming back for a 2023 model year update. The Niro's been done already. It's still under a load of camouflage and all the foam and the padding and stuff, so we can't see what it's looking like. But we do have some spy pictures of it towing, which I think is interesting. And, you know, it'll probably be under the skin very similar to the Kia e-Niro. By the way, Kyle, on Out of Spec this week, didn't you have a Kia e-Niro deep dive?
Yeah, one of my colleagues went to go drive it and took on a full tour. Also, one thing that's curious about this Kona situation is, wasn't it just updated this year with a new front end and everything? So they're running a one model year update, or maybe this is in 2 years, or what's going on, do you think, Martin?
It looks pretty close, but have a look at the inside of this. Now, that to me looks like an Arniq 5.
It really does.
That screen, the artwork... I mean, the artwork on the Arniq 5 was always an updated version of what they have already. But I mean, look, there's the paddles, the steering wheel, the climate bar there. That all looks like the inside of an IONIQ 5, and that's no bad thing. So, you know, so much attention goes on the new cars, or the EGMP cars, so the Kia EV6 and the IONIQ 5, but the Kia and the Hyundai old ones, which are still being updated, I think they've got a real place in the market. If they're going to do stuff, something like this, and put that inside of it, I think that looks fantastic. And I was, when I saw this, I just thought that's a vote of confidence from Hyundai that this car's going to be around for the US market, or maybe all markets, for what, the next 3 to 5 years, maybe. What do you, anyone have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same as what we're seeing Kia's strategy is with the e-Niro, the Niro hybrid, the plug-in hybrid, and the regular hybrid. Kona will have the EV version probably run alongside Niro EV continuing. What's just curious to me about all of this is what they're going to price it at. Because for just a bit more money, if it's quite expensive, then why not just get the EGMP car? And, you know, then you're getting a rear-wheel drive-based car with much higher voltage, much faster charging. But Konas have always had sort of this magical efficiency about them that might be more efficient than the IONIQ. We'll have to run them side by side and do all the testing. But yeah, I mean, I agree, Martin. If they price this right, these things have more than enough of a place in our market. They charge just enough to be like, okay, they're 77 kilowatt peak. I mean, it's not let's go across the country, although I have taken one early days halfway across the country, and it was doable, at least not easy back then. And I think it's if they use it for fleets, like here, for example, they use Niro EVs for our local Uber and Lyft fleet in Denver. There's like hundreds of them everywhere. You never see a privately owned one. That's a great use case for these.
I think they look great. And if the price is good, but they make them in South Korea. So the ones that you get, at least, not available to fall underneath the Inflation Reduction Act. And I do believe your Vice President Kamala Harris is currently in South Korea. Last night, I saw a note coming out of the White House that she had met with the President of South Korea, and they are discussing South Korea's concerns about losing any form of tax credit. But I don't know. I mean, it's signed into law now, right? It's happening. I mean, I'm sure South Korea have got concerns, the same as the European Union and China. I mean, but that was almost the point of your package of financial incentives, which was, the Korean cars said, well, we're being disadvantaged, of which the reply would be, yes,
yeah.
That was the point of it. So we'll wait and see. Because without that discount, you're right, in terms of the price, man, I mean, it's not old technology, but you are taking a bit of a punt on something that's been around a while now.
Well, South Korean companies should be able to get some of that money, because they do make the batteries. The LG batteries are made in America, a lot of them. And there's a couple of South Korean battery companies actually with factories in the U.S. and more on the way. You know, they're partnered with GM on the Ultium batteries, and yeah, so it shouldn't be like a huge disadvantage. I mean, of course, they're not assembled here, but yeah, so they can make some changes there, I guess. But basically, they needed to price it right coming out of the gate to make this a good option. Why buy the IONIQ 5 instead?
But what I like about the Kona is you can always see the battery pack. It's really visible the Kona. You can always see it strapped in underneath. it goes to the edge really. But you can see that black plastic around the front bumper trim as well. I'm not a huge fan of that. It looks a bit BZ4X-y to me. But we'll wait and see. Okay, I thought it was worth a mention on the podcast today. This is also worth a mention as well. This is Polestar 3, October 12th. We find out more details about it. 510 horsepower, and of course, a dedicated electric vehicle. This is probably going to be $80,000, if not more. You know, this is not a vehicle that everyone's going to be buying, but and so it's relatively kind of rarefied air that it's breathing. But certainly, it sits in a very competitive spot of premium SUVs. Now, look, this just looks, I don't know, it reminds me of something, but I don't know what, that back end. Unless any of you look at that and go, oh, it looks just like the, you know, Porsche Cayenne. A Cayenne, maybe?
Porsche. I mean, it's got the Volvo light thing going on, light signature on that back end. It looks great. I mean, I'm looking for more pictures of it.
There aren't any. There's some renders out there, but that's the official picture that was released.
Okay.
This week. So yeah, that's 80,000 plus, I guess, for the Polestar 3 when we find out more details. And they're really obviously talking about the Volvo safety stuff, the reputation of Volvo, and they've got all the gear to put into that. I think it comes with their advanced driver assist, the LiDAR stuff as well. I believe this. I think you've got to when you get into this segment of car. Tom, what are the competitive vehicles for something like this that you've driven when you finally get to drive the Polestar? What will you be comparing it to?
So, obviously, it's going to be compared with the R1T. Sure, even BMW iX. I mean, the price point on this, have they announced the price point? I haven't seen
but it's going to be 80 grand plus, isn't it? Or is it even more?
It's got to be in that price range. So that's, you're really looking at those type of vehicles there. I mean, the iX starts at what, 84, I think, is the base price for the iX. So yeah, it's got some tough competition. And even, Model X now is up a little bit higher than that, but there's plenty of room in that market. I guess regular e-tron also, but Paul, I love the driving dynamics of the Polestar 2. I would imagine that they're going to stick with that. It's probably going to be a really comfortable, good driving experience. And if they repeat what they did in the Polestar 2, in SUV form, it's going to be a great driving vehicle. So I think I love what Polestar is doing so far. Every vehicle that I've been in that they've put out so far has been, wonderfully ergonomically designed and just feel, rock solid driving experience. So I think it's going to be a good vehicle. I'm just curious to see where it fits in price wise.
Kyle, when you were over here in Europe, did you drop into Polestar or am I imagining that?
Yeah, no, I was over there.
And what's the vibe like at that place?
Ooh. Weird. It's like very, not much going on. It was pretty interesting, actually. Everything is very sterile. Everything's very white. The whole building is white in and out. But the car park had some interesting cars in it. There was the CEO of Polestar's like modded Polestar 2 performance that was lowered with some big wheels. He had put Polestar 1 wheels on his Polestar 2 and it looked amazing. So like there was a sense of like we're different from Volvo, but also like their distribution center is right across the street. So yeah, I don't know how much free reign Polestar is going to have away from the Volvo side of things.
So interesting to see.
Brian Morse posted that it's 73,000 starting price.
Wow.
That's a little bit less than what I expected. And that's if that's correct, that's right head to head with Audi e-tron. And I think it would fare well, although I love the e-tron, I think it would fare well in a direct comparison. As far as if that's its main competition, I think it would probably do well. So that's good to hear. I thought it would be about 10,000 more, to be honest with you.
Mike says that they're all going to be made in South Carolina, which now he says that does ring a bell. Even the European and worldwide cars will be exported. That does ring a bell now, Mike. So, if they want to do a launch edition for 79 and get it under the 80K limit for the incentives, then go Polestar.
The Polestar 2 starts at 48.4, it says their MSRP. So I was thinking it was going to be even, I was thinking more like 65 area, which would put it in league with the Cadillac Lyric, which would be also an interesting comparison between the two. But it looks a little smaller in the picture, like this Polestar 3. And it looks, is that like, I don't know, does that strike you all as being slightly smaller than, say, like the Lyric or the BMW iX?
There's no difference, or Cayenne or something.
Yeah, I was thinking make Porsche Macan size.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kyle, you're familiar with Porsche. Hey, Ellie.
Yeah, Ellie decided to just pop in, but she got bored. She's not interested. She just left. I think it looks pretty unique to me on the back end, very C40-esque with that sloping back end. I'm not a super design nerd, so I'm I'm not qualified to answer what things look like, I should say.
Well, okay, then talk to us. In that case, Kyle, talk to us about charging in Germany, because NIO just unveiled their first battery swap station, and they've unveiled it at a location. I'm going to butcher this. apologies in advance to our German viewers, Zeus Marshausen.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay, right, good. That's a charging station that you are so familiar with. It's on the A8. I think it joins Munich and Stuttgart. And that's where NIO have built their first battery swap station. Tell us a little bit about that charging. It looks like a Porsche place. It looks like, you know, very German. But about the location and then your thoughts on NIO battery swapping and if it'll work in Europe.
Yeah, so what's been really interesting is I've been watching them build the NIO battery swap station for the last few months. So I've been tweeting about it, making posts. I think it's really exciting. You know, it was no secret that the battery swap station was going here. And it's really the perfect place, I think, to put a battery swap station to be like a big middle finger to the rest of electric cars charging, sitting there charging, because there's 70 DC fast charging plugs here. And they can all go, it's starting at 140 kilowatts, each one is physically capable of, going up to 500 plus kilowatts at some of them. So they have some huge range of charging power. There's a bank of 12 superchargers just to the left of this image right here. And so then you're going to have this cool battery swap station where a car is going to pull in, and 6 minutes later, it's going to pull out with a 100% charged battery pack. Which a lot of EVs, like when I'm driving Taycan in Germany, for example, I charge it for 10 minutes to go from 0 to 50% and then I'm off. But that's still 50% in 10 minutes. This is 100% in 6. Now, I'm not all Mr. Battery Swapping over here. I actually think it's kind of silly. I don't know if it'll work in our market at all. And I'm not sure it will work in the German market because distances are shorter. There's chargers everywhere. The one thing that it could work in is maybe in a city center, like somewhere near Stuttgart, somewhere near Munich downtown, because a lot of people do live in apartments or rental homes. So I think a huge percentage of Germans don't own their own house, actually, which could make installing charging a little bit more difficult. But keep in mind, even a regular wall plug in Germany is 3.2 kilowatts, where for us, or three, you know, we're only getting 1.2. So yeah, weird location from like a usability standpoint. I'm looking forward to it a little bit because I got to go over and grab a NIO then, because what I want to do is run full speed from Munich in the middle of the night to here, which is a little bit less than halfway to Stuttgart, but it's on a de-restricted section, swap the battery pack, and then get right back up to top speed. That should be kind of cool. That'll make a fun video.
Wow. I think that the battery swapping model is working in Norway, but I don't know how successfully, where they built their first two. I think this is the third one in Europe. NIO have built a factory in Hungary to make 1,000 more of these. They'll actually make the battery swap stations there. And as you say, yeah, Germany's a big rental market. There tends to be a lot of landlords in Germany. It's less owner-occupier and in a more rental economy. So that could be interesting in terms of installing charge. I hadn't even considered that. And in terms of the model of not owning the battery inside of your car, again, I don't know how well people will take to it. You know, Nissan did it early with the Leaf. Renault did it for a long time with the Zoes, but both got out of that business, and Renault are trying to work their way backwards out of that. I've sold my Zoe now, but you know, they were calling me and offering them to buy me out of the battery. The price wasn't right, but they were clearly wanting to get out of those battery leases and flog the batteries off to owners. So it may be a cultural thing as well. But here's Tom, I'll come to you next. Here's where I got it wrong 4 years ago when I was, you know, my podcast 4.5 years old now. And I was saying in the early days, look, the idea of going like to like fossil fuels to batteries in terms of land use is daft, right? Because there was lots of talk about let's reuse petrol stations for filling up EVs. It's ridiculous because those locations evolved because of the format of the fuel and that you could gas up very quickly. You know, fast forward 4.5 years, man, was I wrong. Now you can do a battery swap or even fast charge an EV in 10 or 15 minutes. Actually, if you live in the middle of, you know, London, New York, Seoul, where land is at a complete premium, as people stop buying petrol, they can put these kind of things on that land rather than redeveloping it for apartments. And all of a sudden, you got some refueling. So I can see battery swapping working. What's your thoughts, Tom?
So, you know, I did use it in China, NIO's battery swap, when I was over there before COVID. And it worked flawlessly. And the people there absolutely loved it. But one of the dynamics that is unique in China is nobody owns their own home. everybody lives in these giant apartment complexes, and they're not yet outfitted with charging infrastructure. Eventually they will be, but right now people do not have the ability to charge at home. So, you know, having that ability to do a quick refuel stop is hugely important. And the people that I talked to in China that owned NIOs, almost every single one of them said, this is the reason why I got this car, was because it's a 5-minute stop. There's a swap station 5 minutes from my house, and it's so simple. But I don't know, as you mentioned, I don't know how that's going to translate to people in Europe and in the US, you know, when NIO eventually has sights set on coming to the US. I don't know if people are going to want that model. And, you know, as Kyle mentioned earlier, it's a 10-minute stop for him to get to 50% state of charge, but not to be fully charged. The thing is, if you're on some sort of a road trip and you only need to get to 50%, that's fine, you know, to get to your destination, then you can plug in wherever you're going. You don't always have to be fully recharged to make your destination. It really depends on how far you're driving. And you know, here in the US, we tend to have longer road trips. It's a really big country. In Europe, I don't know how often somebody needs to exhaust the range of their battery. Let's say you've got an EV that can go 300 miles per charge. So you're only comfortable driving 250 miles because you don't want to take it down below 10% or whatever. So I don't know how often people do more than 400 mile trips, you know, where they need to stop longer than 15 minutes, you know, to get to 60 or 70% charged and then move on. So, you know, to me, I don't see battery swap as a permanent solution. I think where we are now in the industry, where there's not a lot of infrastructure, where the EVs, while they're charging faster than they have in the past, we're still not at that point where they're going to charge as quickly as they're going to in 4 or 5 years from now. You know, I look at this and say, geez, in the early 2030s, if we have, we will have a much more robust DC fast charge infrastructure, and EVs will charge quicker than they do today, will we need battery swap? You know, I know Better Place back 10 years ago was looking at the landscape then, and it seemed like, God, we're going to have to do this because there's no charging stations. The EVs charge, the fastest an EV can charge is at 50 kilowatts. So, you know, battery swap makes all the sense in the world. But now fast forward 10 years from now, look at where we are now. And then I'm thinking 10 years from now. And, you know, will this be necessary for anything other than, as Kyle mentioned earlier, some urban centers where people can't charge at home? And maybe it makes sense there. I don't know if it makes sense on highways anymore for long distance travel, you know, once EVs can go further and charge faster.
A few people in the comments saying about standards. Well, they're CATL, the world's biggest EV battery maker, are getting into battery swapping, and their dimensions, their connector is going to be a standard for anybody that wants to use it. And some of the other EV makers in China, not BYD, not NIO, but I think others, have signed on to that. So, you know, they're not a car maker, they're a battery maker, but they're getting into the battery swap business. Ah, super interesting. And we'll see where it goes. Let's talk about what we've been driving.
One sec, Martin. Get Let me just follow up on that. The operative term and what you just said was for those that want to use it.
Yeah.
And that was the problem that Better Place had back when they first started. They approached every automaker and, you know, nobody agreed to use it except for Renault. Yeah. And they only agreed to put it in one of their vehicles. And I talked to the management at Better Place back then. I was actually really good friends with one of their top executives. So I knew everything that was going on behind the scenes when Better Place started. The biggest problem was that they couldn't get buy-in from the automakers. And since then, I had talked to all the automakers and said, you know, what happened with Better Place? Why didn't you, did you consider making one model at least, you know? And all of them said, there is no way we will allow another entity to dictate the size, the shape, the weight of something that's so critical to our car. So we're never going to buy somebody else's replaceable, swappable batteries. Like, we'll buy cells, we'll package them in modules. We'll set the size of the battery pack, but there's no way we're going to use a standard size battery pack that can swap with other vehicles. I heard this from pretty much every automaker. Can they change their mind? Of course. But they vehemently stated that this is out of the question. It's a non-starter for us. So without that, I don't know how this gets traction. We'd have to have all the automakers buy in, right? In order to really make it work.
And more batteries, Dom, are cell to pack technology, getting rid of the modules, the BYD batteries that we think are going into the Teslas in Germany. They'll be cell to pack technology, and you can increase the energy density in a battery pack that way, but you can't start swapping those batteries, right?
No, I don't really understand the whole swapping thing. I'm really surprised that NIO took this outside of China, because you know it's very capital intensive, especially like for scale like this. It takes a lot of money, and then you're also producing all these batteries that you could put inside cars. So you're producing way more batteries than cars, and it just doesn't seem like an efficient use of capital to me.
Yeah,
but
good point. Yeah,
they have a plan. I guess they have a vision. They see how it could possibly work. I don't share that vision. I mean, I'm open to listening to what their argument and everything, but man, I have a hard time seeing how this would scale hugely, you know, how they would have to charge extra for the cars in order to pay for some of that, you know, that infrastructure. Man, I just don't see how they're going to do it, but you know, show me.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see. Both of the founders, the co-founders of NIO, are in Germany for 12, 14 days right now, so they're clearly taking it, you know, very seriously, and I wouldn't write them off. Anyway, let's get on to what we've been driving this week. Dominic, you are on your two-week vacation right now. In all seriousness, you have left sunny and windy Florida on your travels. It looks like you're home again now, though. I thought you were still traveling. How's your journey been? Are you safe? You know, again, in all seriousness, the news has traveled the world far and wide. I know it's almost a cliche and easy to say that sort of our thoughts are with those affected by it, but certainly there's the EV related bits of a natural disaster, which I almost think we have to be careful with, because it can come off a bit almost smug and self-satisfied at times, people are, you know, without power in Florida, and then there's someone going, hey, look at my power wall. And I'm like, I don't know if the optics are great on that. I know you're proud. But anyway, so, you know, how have the travels been? You're borrowing Kyle's Model 3 until Christmas 2024. How have the journeys been?
The journey is pretty good. So I left Fort Collins the Monday before, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, and I drove 9 days basically with a stop in New Brunswick I stayed one night in one place in New Brunswick. So over 9 days, I traveled 4,393 miles, visited around 35, I think, superchargers, I think, to do all that. I've only had one issue with one supercharger. In Rivière-du-Loup, Wolf River, I guess you'd call that in English, but everyone calls it Rivière-du-Loup. I guess it's been a long-standing issue with just getting power out of that station. I think it's the connection with the utility or something needs to be resolved. There's a couple of stalls that don't work, and then the others are, except for one, are all throttled to 50 kilowatts maybe or something. And so that was a little bit rough, but you know, overall it was the charging was amazing. The experience of just walk up and it's so easy too. The shape of the thing, and we talk about that, but when you're actually, you know, using it all the time, plugging it in, I've tried to plug in my Chevy Spark EV to the CCS2 connector, and it's this big monstrous thing, and you got to use both hands, and is the cord long enough? And it was like a struggle. And just the difference in operational after this, I'm like, man, I think the car companies, the OEMs, are ridiculously dumb for not adopting the Tesla standard. It would have been, it's just so much better. It's unbelievably better. Just the ease of use and simple, and oh my God.
It just always works. You know, 99 times out of 100 always works. So you've added 4,500 miles to Kyle's Model 3. Are you still eating through some of those referral miles, or are you you racking up some bills on his credit card now then?
This car has free supercharging.
Really?
So it didn't cost Kyle or I anything to put all those miles for the electricity at least, and which is, you know, a pretty awesome bonus. And I was just thinking that, yeah, I think I was talking to Kyle yesterday, and it just struck me that, oh yeah, so there is a, we have, I think we talked about this last week, that Tesla was catching up with its demand a little bit. So if it did have like some demand issues, it has so many levers it can pull. It can pull like its pricing, it can bring that down a little bit, but it can also add some free supercharging, like maybe, I don't know, like this is like all free, but it could do like a more limited kind of free supercharging, like 50 kilowatt hours a month or something like that for free. Or anyway, it's just like a little demand thing, but just to get back to the trip. So man, it's been, someone mentioned I was chasing a hurricane. So I drove when I left here, Fiona was like off up in the North Atlantic. I'm like, whew, I can go, it's safe. Then I get to, just after the podcast last week, I realized I'm driving into Fiona. It's like, it's hitting like Southern New Brunswick and Nova Scotia and Newfoundland and PEI lost all their power. I have a cousin who had a house on the right by the beach in Shediac, and he had an open, actually he was selling it, and he had an open house the next day, and it got like 3 feet of water, and it was like, it was, and he didn't evacuate either. They was at the house when this was all happening. It was pretty scary. Luckily everybody was okay. And then I found out we have this hurricane hitting Florida. So I needed to rush back. So I did. I left New Brunswick at 7:30 Eastern time, I guess, on to Monday. I'm not sure, but one sleep later, and I made it here at 2 a.m. So like two long days of driving down the I-95 corridor, which was a heck of a drive. It was a pretty great vacation. I mean, I love driving, and it was really great getting to know like the Tesla, just everything about it, you know, just how it drives, how it handles, the charging experience. The autopilot was very interesting. Because I didn't have really experience with the autopilot, and now I've forced myself to use it. I guess I'm a control freak, because it's hard to see control of the wheel. You know, you're driving along, and so if the road turns a bit, when I drive, I hug the inside of the turns a bit, and autopilot does not do that. And it was really hard to, you know, it's like sometimes even drifting a little to the right on a turn. I would break the toll, you know, and just take over the steering myself. Like so many times it took a while to really kind of let it do its thing. But also you never know for sure if it's going to do everything, because sometimes, you know, like in construction zones, the lanes will be shifted and there'll be some older lines and it'll get mixed up and confused. And then it'll send like that big warning that you're crossing lines, and it's because of, there's a big sound, you know, just like flashing lights, and it's the wheels pulling, tugging. And it's like a bit much, actually. Right. Mm. Oh, and someone mentioned phantom braking. So I got to experience phantom braking, mostly in the rain. I think it happened on the last stretch, the last couple of days. I hit some rain around New York State around there. And that was bad at night with the, it's so dark, and it just, there's no lights, and the wet pavement just soaks up all the light, right? So you can't really see anything. And then the lines all kind of went away. It was like just pouring rain. It was like a lot of cars going fast, and no one knows what lane they're in. It's like, oh my God. So it was a, you know, really great experience overall. And I think the Tesla Model 3 performance is just so impressive in so many ways.
Brilliant. And that's good. We're glad you're home. If anyone didn't know, you're Tallahassee, right?
Yes, right.
How so are you affected? If not at all.
I'm not really affected at all. I got to say, it was like a little breezy. It didn't rain, and I really feel bad for the people down south, because that's a big hit, and we don't know what the death toll. I think it might be significant. We're not even sure about that yet. But yeah, there's a lot of people and a lot of trouble down there, and you know, we need to think about them for a little, you know, while, and help them get back on their feet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, someone in the comments asked, did you put track mode on?
I couldn't find track mode.
There we go. What they are referring to.
I need to look for it. Kyle, it's got track mode, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I need to I need to look for that because it doesn't just pop up like, you know.
No, you just go car, I think pedals and steering, track mode. You have to be in park and then you can adjust all the settings.
Okay.
What I put in the comments is referring to for new viewers is that one of Kyle's colleagues at Out of Spec, who makes brilliant videos along with the rest of the team, Jordan, did have his brand new Model S Plaid in track mode on a public road and had a bit of a bump, which I'm pleased to say is all now fixed. Kyle, we missed last week, I think, asking you about this. And if I did, just, you know, tell me to shut up. The car is back. Your Model S is back. How's it been?
Yeah, have it back and thrilled. And you know what? At first, I think it just needed to, you know, kind of find itself, get settled in, because it was had one little creak and had a weird little vibration. But then some other viewers commented, others have noticed this vibration on new Model S without a crash, so maybe unrelated. And the car's driving great. Really is. I mean, there's still a couple things left to do with it. You know, it's not back to 100%, but just happy to have it back in the driveway. Been driving it and it feels really good. And glad to have it.
And the last we heard from you, it was going through insurance and stuff. So we're being a little bit careful what we were talking about. What was the verdict on the damage? Because we all watched your video, with the rear wheels facing in the wrong direction. And can you just talk us through what happened here? It was pretty much a 180 spin. The car hit a curb pretty much side on, which isn't great. And when I saw your video, I was very worried that it had pushed maybe the half shaft into the motor or something, but all good by the sounds of it. What was the final damage though, in terms of the actual pieces that need to be replaced?
Yeah, we hadn't been hiding anything. I'm all about full transparency with everything, but we just don't know the final number. So all of the suspension, everything Tesla did was about 10 grand, but that doesn't account for the new wheels and tires. There actually is one issue with the front fender on the car where there is a tiny tear at the bottom of the fender that's like half the size of my fingernail. And Colton and I have decided, let's not fix this because I don't want to repaint the whole side of the car and blend stuff for a little tiny tear, which we can probably massage and make it look good as new. These things are still a little bit up in the air. And I guess... I've asked Jordan to coordinate all of that. So maybe it's all done. I just don't know yet. But my guess is by the time we add wheels and tires, we have to go back and get the paint all fixed again, because when they were working on it with the car got scratched all over the place. We'll have a video on that. It's going to be $15,000 or $20,000 by the time we're done.
And we've heard horror stories. They're the ones that tend to make their way onto the internet, let's face it. People who have a great experience aren't the ones that tend to go, oh, everything was fine. It seems like it was really quick with Tesla. We've heard service center, parts supply, supply chain nightmare stories, but this seemed pretty quick.
So when the car in there, Tesla had no idea who we were. It was just another car that showed up. I mean, I bought the car there, but I was in and out in 10 minutes. I don't really know anyone at the local service center. So a lot of people were like, you got your car back because you make YouTube videos. And I'm like, no, they didn't. They literally didn't. The car just showed up and it had Jordan's name on it. Like they didn't know it was an out of spec situation or even what out of spec is. But Tesla was amazing. They kept the car inside. I guess what happened was they pulled it into a bay to inspect it. And when they got everything off, they're like, oh, we are not putting this car back under its own weight. And I don't know if it clogging up a bay sped up the process, but it was about 4 weeks or so that it was in there broken to getting it completely back on the road. Obviously they saw our updates and we've become friends with our service advisor, but this was after the repairs have kind of commenced. So yeah, I mean, I was pleased that I can only share my experience, whether it's, you know, if you have two crashed cars and you bring them in and one is out of spec and one's not, I don't know if ours will get done faster. I sure hope not. And I did not get the impression we got special service, but I thought it was amazing. They were very communicative through the app. You just can't freaking call Tesla service. That's the problem. So that was really frustrating that I can't just call our service advisor and be like, hey, Toby, what's going on? And Toby's awesome. So yeah, we don't know the final bill yet. Still has to do, you know, have to get reimbursed for things because I bought new Martian wheels to put on it. And I think, I don't know. But probably about 20 grand. And then, of course, the car's lost some value in this. So that's another big chunk.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now let's get into it. There is a Lucid Air sitting outside your house right now. Tell us the story of the huge road trip you've just done with this.
Yeah. So the Lucid Air, what a cool car. You know, the thing is, the only time I've been able to spend in the Lucid Air up until 2 days ago was 16 minutes. I made a YouTube video and it was, that was it. That was literally my time for what is, you know, claimed to be, and I am sort of believing it, you know, the most technologically advanced electric car from a powertrain standpoint. And I was like, why haven't we been driving these things? They're amazing. So anyway, we couldn't get a car from Lucid to review. I think everyone knows that we, you know, been asking and asking and asking to review it. And one of our viewers, we actually have a lot of viewers who own Lucids, like a huge number of Lucid owners watch Out of Spec, which is really awesome. One of them was kind enough to say, hey, I'm going on vacation for the next month. Why don't you just take my car and, you know, do all the stuff you want to do with it? And I'm like, well, A, that's kind of even better because now we have a production car that's in the hands of a consumer that's, you know, not specially treated. I'm not saying they would or wouldn't do that, but I just think, you know, nice to get a car that's in someone's hands and to do all of the stuff with it. And aside from, you know, not being able to drive it up until this point, I'm really blown away. I drove it from Palm Springs, California, up here to Fort Collins, Colorado. The best efficiency I've ever seen on a road trip of this kind. The most amount of range I've ever seen on a road trip of this kind. The car I'm driving is the Grand Touring trim with the aero wheels, so the long range version. It has 516 miles of EPA rated range, 112 kilowatt hour battery pack claimed. Not sure if that's usable or gross, but Lucid tends to have very little buffers in their battery pack, so it's ish around there. And yeah, just an insane monster, really is. The powertrain, this is not the fast one. This is the only 800 horsepower one, and it pulls so hard to very high speed. And I was like, wow, that's impressive. And the stability, the chassis, the feeling, I haven't shredded it yet. I haven't driven it up on a mountain road, but you just get this underlying sense of agility cruising down the highway. It's soft. It's quiet. Has good massaging seats. Really amazing. Blown away with it. Really am. The one big problem, without question, is the software. The car has no lane centering at the moment. By the way, start of production was a year ago. And so I have to keep making that point. You know, it's hard to make a new car company, right? And to produce these cars. And you know, at first they just had to get the cars out the door and they're out the door. So now it's how are they going to support these cars with software? I will say I've seen reports of people opening doors on Lucids and the screens taking a while to boot up and things like that. I've not experienced anything like that. I open the door, screens are right on. Just in my time in the last 2 days with the car, I've gotten two software updates. So they are hammering update out to this thing. And to all of the cars, other Lucid owners as well, confirming they're getting the same software updates that I am. It's not just specific because I'm reviewing this one. I'm really just all the hardware stuff that I care about, the intangibles, the driving feel, the way that the thing cruises, and for a car without air suspension, it's really insane.
And you pointed out in one of your posts that you've never before charged at that location that you have done and then thought, well, I haven't got to charge again. And you've just driven across the country in your Rivian towing your Nissan Leaf where you were stopping a lot and then you immediately segue to a vehicle where you're like just going and going and going.
I'm right? Like, are you sure I don't have to stop? Like, I something's got to be wrong here.
Right.
It's amazing the range on that thing. I mean, when I did the range test, after driving 250 miles, I'm at 50% state of charge. It's like, is this thing ever going to drain? It really just goes and goes and goes and goes. And as Kyle mentioned, the efficiency is really what's amazing. Yes, it has very large battery pack, but it's amazingly efficient, that vehicle. And you know, I'm glad Kyle's getting some more seat time in it now because I always like to compare my driving impressions with Kyle's. And as you know, I've had a lot of experience behind the wheel. I've been able to go out, not get a loan, like what Kyle really wants is get a loan to have the car for a week or so, like he's doing here. But I've had the opportunity to fly out to California and Arizona and drive it for extended periods of time. And I've just been so thoroughly impressed about pretty much everything when I'm driving it. It's great to hear Kyle getting some good seat time now and hearing the same things that I felt when I drove it. So it's really an amazing vehicle.
Yeah, it's a very high quality design in terms of the way that the thing goes down the road. And I'll quantify all of that and put that in a video. Again, this car is not from Lucid, but I did ask Lucid in full transparency if they could send us somehow a set of the 21-inch performance wheels and tires, because the aeros that are on this car have zero grip. I mean, not zero. I wouldn't say it's unsafe, but like with a car this heavy, you want some tire under there. And obviously the point of the wheels that I have on this one are for max range. So pizza cutters, they sit well in the wheel well. They really look terrible. A really bad looking wheel on this car. It ruins the look. But you do get the benefit of the range on it. So I've asked them to see maybe if they would be so kind to send us a set. We'll, of course, send it back maybe with some less rubber on it. but I thought, okay, for us to really evaluate the Lucid properly, which is sort of needed for someone to evaluate this car as a, you know, in many different segments, like we typically do when we have an exciting vehicle, we need different wheels and tires to do the performance stuff. Otherwise, it's full drift mode and going to be just a big giggle fest around the track. But I have to say, once they get their software worked out, and it sounds like we're right on the cusp of all this happening, I'm really glad I'm experiencing it before this software update, because this is what Lucid owners are experiencing today, which is lots of little weird bugs and glitches and no great driver assistance. I mean, I got to tell you, the sound system kept cutting out on me on the way back. So I was like listening to music out of my iPhone. But these things, part of it's because the car doesn't know how to handle coming in and out of cell service that well, which going over the Rockies, that's all you do. And then part of it, I think, was, you know, it just like the sound was static. So the amplifier is freaking out. You don't spend the money buying an early Lucid expecting a perfect car, in my opinion. It's like early Tesla days. Everyone knows, hey, this is brand new. It's going to get better. Mm-hmm. And all of the owners, I think, are pretty lenient with a lot of these little bugs and issues, as am I, actually. I'm not the biggest like harping on software guy, but I do think the car needs a big update. I had one issue on the way home. Charging. I didn't have to charge very often to get home.
Yes. Tell us about this. Yeah.
But this was the first time in years that I've ever had to call Electrify America customer support. I usually don't ever call them because I can tweet about it and they fix it somehow. Or maybe they don't, I don't know. But I was literally stuck at a charger. Like I couldn't get the Lucid to charge at a Signet charger. It was one of the new Signets. It was a Love station in Salina, Utah. One of my favorite charging stops. It didn't suck because they were shooting a TV show of paragliders coming in. So I was like watching all these people fall from the sky. And I was like drinking, waters from Love's. It was a great, great stop, beautiful mountains. But the car wouldn't charge. And I was at 3% state of charge. Now, I had purposefully run the car down to very low single digit percent state of charge to get to this particular station, because the Signet chargers that you're looking at are one of the few chargers that can output the full power needed to charge this car. The car needs a little bit more than 350 amps. I haven't done the calculations. It's very high voltage, but at least on a Signet charger, I knew this thing would give it the juice. And, I rolled up and it just kept saying authentication error, and it would error out the charger and the car would error out. Over and over and over. But of course, before I got to this point, I made sure it charged on Electrify America. I stopped in Baker with plenty of extra battery, plugged it into the new units that they're putting in. Instant connection, charged, great, unplugged. I was like, I'm going to run this sucker down. And the issue is actually, and the owner of this car has reported it many times, and I have seen it reported on Twitter many times as well. If you go through the comments when I was doing this, other Lucid owners are like, oh yeah, this has happened to me, where the EA network is in this complimentary charge state right now, where they're doing back-end network upgrades that somehow take a month. I don't know, but it's free. So like, okay, that doesn't suck. It's like, we can still charge and we're good. And then Lucid has their plug-in charge function on this car with complimentary charging. And when you have a Lucid plug-in charge with an Electrify America complimentary charge, that somehow equals no charging. And so it's the same with the Ford Pass Plus, I believe, with plug-in charge. But at least in the Fords, you can just toggle a switch and turn off plug and charge and then default to, you know, free vend mode on the Electrify America stations. And this is just how I understand it, by the way. Don't take everything I'm saying as gospel, but this is my understanding of the situation. With Lucid, there's no way to actually disable the plug and charge function on the car. However, there is a way to bypass it in the Lucid app, which is to pre-authorize the Electrify America station, which should typically be shown in this menu right here. There would be a little Electrify America tab between the car and open charge port. But you can see this does not have the little tab right there. And neither did the owner of the car. I thought, okay, maybe because I'm a user, I don't know. Like, I called the owner. I'm like, do you see this little tab? He's like, no. And so that's where I was stuck. I couldn't activate the charger with the phone using the Lucid app. I couldn't get the chargers to go into it. And so it took over an hour, hour and a half before, you know, of tweeting about it, basically for EA to call me and say, plug in a number 3. And of course I had called their customer service and they're wonderful, really wonderful people. A huge shout out to Kelly, who spent 30 minutes on the phone with me experimenting, taking the charger out of free vend, you know, all this plus or minus, it'll all be on out of spec motoring. She was wonderful, really wonderful. But I don't know if a normal person would have gotten out of there so easily. Like, I think maybe certainly, cause I was hammering the Twitter, like, someone come grab me. I'm in Salina. I don't know how a normal person could have figured that situation out, especially with the Lucid app not showing the EA situation. Pretty weird. Yeah, I tried everything. Wallets, credit cards, you know, activating the thing on my app. We tried every combination on the back end with EA service. The charger worked fine. It was just all payment authentication.
Yeah,
you know what's interesting about that is I've heard other people report the same thing. Now, during Electrify America has this free you know, charging while they're doing this back end updates. So just to see if I had that same problem, I didn't even need to charge. I brought my Lightning, which has plug and charge, to an EA station, and I have plug and charge turned on. I actually don't. I don't, because you actually end up paying more, which I still have to talk to Ford about, because they promised me that they had this thing worked out and that this wasn't going to be the case anymore. But it still does. You pay the 43 cents per kilowatt hour, the non-member fee, if you use your plug and charge, even though I'm a member plus member. There's no way to link the accounts, although they promised me they had this worked out months ago. In any event, I digress. I'm going to get to the bottom of that. I'm going to talk to Ford really soon about that and get that straight. But I had plug and charge enabled, went to the EA station during this free period, plugged in, and it worked. It didn't have that conflict of the vehicle trying to pay when it's free, which I've heard has happened for a lot of people. I've had some of my followers reach out to me and say, this doesn't work. There's a problem. You guys should talk about it. We just did now. I'm glad Kyle brought it up, because I quite honestly forgot about it. But it's weird that my vehicle with plug and charge works during this period. It doesn't have that glitch.
Even weirder, Tom, was that the Lucid charges fine on I used 4 Electrify America stations to get home. I didn't charge deeply at all of them. And only one of them caused an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like every station.
But the overall thing is that my takeaway from this and your trip, that Lucid really needs to put some energy and effort into its software, the software side of it, things. You know, it's got the powertrain.
Got to check out for a minute, guys.
Sure.
No worries.
It's got the mechanical part figured out. The powertrain is solid, but like with Tesla, that's really what makes one of the things that makes Tesla such a great company is their software is ridiculously good, and it's made them nimble and able to handle like this chip shortage situation, for instance, where they've been able to substitute chips, rewrite software to deal with this kind of new chip. You know, that's kind of a big deal. And it's just an indication of how much resources and energy that Tesla puts on in their software department. And I think Lucid would be smart to take a page of that book. And also, well, you know,
Lucid has Mike Bell working for them, heading up their software team, who was an Apple guy previously, who I believe came in later after the start of software development, who's working to make things right. It's just my impression. Look, making a car isn't easy. I'm not here to defend Lucid. I think you sell a car to the public. That's how it should be reviewed. That's why I'm reviewing it. And it shouldn't have glitches. It does. The thing is, the car is capable to update over-the-air updates. They're at least proving to me that they're working hard on it, because in 2 days, the car got two software updates. Yeah. They know the issues. I'm seeing improvements already compared to early Lucid drivers, you know, commenting that, you know, screens take a while to boot up, things like that. There's still a long ways to go, But the stuff you can't change, that's all there. That's what matters. It's not like, oh, I really wish that the front brakes were bigger or something. I don't know. Maybe I will when I drive it hard. But you know, you can't software update something like that. At least the hardware, the sense of build quality in the car is there. But yeah, I will cover software updates as I have this vehicle for the next 3 weeks or so. We're going to, hopefully this car will get the big update to enable Dream Drive and some other things. You know, during my time with it. If not, I'm sure the owner would be kind enough to let me borrow it again once it gets updated to it. And really looking forward to seeing what's to come. There's a long way ahead, but wow, do they have the best starting point I've experienced in a long time.
Great. Did we talk last week about EQS SUV that you were driving?
We did not, because it was under embargo.
Right. Let's talk about this then. This is the SUV version of the EQS. You had like a Mercedes event. There was an EQB as well. But let's start with this vehicle and your impressions of this.
Yeah. So, by the way, global launch for EQS SUV. I'm just pumped because it was in Colorado. Perfect background for this car. And so you'll see all of the videos went up yesterday. I always put our first drives typically a day or two after when everyone else does. For strategy reasons, but you know, Matt Watson had his video up and he was in Colorado. Thomas from Auto Gefuel was here as well. got to message him a little bit, and we were trying to coordinate, but I was away. Yeah, so it was really, really cool to have the launch of this car here. And to me, this is kind of where they should have started, in all honesty, instead of the US sedan. But in very typical German thought process, the S-Class level sedan always goes first. And that's where they get the most range, and that's where they can sell the numbers. But this is the one people want to actually buy, especially around here. And it's a full optional 7-seat electric SUV. It's built on the EQS sedan EVA 2 platform, similar chassis. And since the embargo is fully lifted, it is a much better EQS sedan. It really is. It's better than that. Has way more rear seat headroom. And I actually don't fit in the backseat of the EQS sedan. I kind of have to sit sideways, which is a big shame, because that car should have had a better backseat for what it was designed for. The EQS SUV, big rear seat. Third row is amazing. Heated third row as well, if you're feeling that way, which is pretty nice. By far the most luxurious electric car I've ever driven. It has much better suspension than the EQS sedan, which I rave about the suspension from a comfort standpoint. But as soon as you start hitting bumps or you load it up into a corner, you actually max the suspension out. It's like almost too soft. It can't even hold up its own weight. Here with the added ride height, I found that in performance driving, which is not the use case for this vehicle, in daily driving and in highway cruising, it was every bit as pretty much as quiet and every bit as comfortable, if not even more comfortable than the EQS sedan, a little bit less bouncy. At 10 degrees of rear steering, even in the SUV, we did full off-roading wheeling, putting wheels up in the air, and it has pretty good drivetrain logic. It does electronic diff simulation by way of brakes. There's no locking differential. It's not a hardcore off-roader. Doesn't need to be. And just thrilled. If I had a family and just needed a big car, a big electric car to put them in, it's this or R1S in my mind.
Wow. So excellent. Even better than the iX?
Well, it's a lot bigger than the iX. The iX is really going to compete probably with a smaller version of this SUV that will come out some point soon that I still can't talk about.
Right.
Excellent. Right. And, you know, no offense to the beautiful place you live, but why do they bring the world's media to Colorado? Was it to do trips up into the mountains and prove it's kind of half off-road? Like, I mean, it's not a Land Rover, but were they kind of going for that angle? How comes it was where you live?
Yeah, I mean, you never know why they choose these things. There's a very big premium section of Denver downtown. So Mercedes wants to have, you know, this luxurious hotel with this whole thing. And so beautiful views for photos, of course, very wealthy area during the drives where they we're taking everyone. And I think it fits the EQS SUV really well. There was a very small focus on the off-roading portion. That wasn't the whole design, but they actually had the EQS SUVs kitted out with all-terrain tires on them. They looked amazing. And the German engineers were like, oh, we really hope someone does this because it's really cool. It was great to see the whole team. Mercedes always brings the people who actually make the car along for these trips. So, you know, at the dinner table, I get to sit with all the engineers and nerd out about, you know, a whole bunch of various topics that most people don't care about. And it was really a wonderful time. And it was easy for me because I got to come home every night. And then I just drove down there. was really, you know, I've never done a drive where I like can like come home and see the dogs and then wake up in the morning and then I'm back to work. It was really a fun experience.
If all car makers could just do all of your global launches in Colorado somewhere, Carl
it's a great place for launches because our airport is huge. We're a hub airport. So you can fly in with no connecting flights from almost any airport right to here. We have some of the best driving roads in the country. We have amazing facilities to do it with. And like, it's the perfect place to launch a car, in my opinion.
You weren't the only one with a new car in your driveway. Tom, we've not had a chance to talk about this video yet. Your Rivian R1T delivery. You actually made a whole video about the process of it arriving. How's it been?
It's been great. You might have to ask my wife about that though, because I really haven't been driving it. She's commandeered it. It's her truck.
That's
now.
Right. So that's the way it should be. That's right.
And I've been doing some traveling. So honestly, I haven't driven it a lot. But about this video, it was really cool. I reached out to Rivian before when they gave me my delivery date and said, look, I'd like to record the delivery process because, you know, everybody knows what you do when you pick up a vehicle from a dealership. And we've all done that. But with Tesla and Rivian and Lucid now that have direct sales models, I think a lot of people are unclear of what exactly happens when you get a vehicle from one of these companies. And they all have different policies and procedures. And quite honestly, I didn't know what to expect from Rivian either. But I asked them, I said, you know, I'd like to record the delivery process. And I just kind of got an email back that was real like, yeah, sure, no problem. And I wanted to make sure. I'm thinking now, do they think I'm just going to come out with my cell phone and stand there for a few, like, and record like a 1 minute video? Because it's my intention to do a real comprehensive delivery video, ask the delivery person a ton of questions. So then I was decided, should I make sure they know that? But if I do, maybe they're going to send like a pro, like somebody that isn't one of their normal delivery people. And then that's not what I want. I want everybody to experience what they might be able to expect. So I left it at that. I got the verbal, yeah, it's okay. And I said, okay, let me just go from there. So now the person comes in a flatbed and you can see that Sade was my delivery person. And as I see the truck pulling up, I'm like, wow, like this is a truck driver delivering there's no Rivian associate. Like I'm thinking it was just like somebody dropping off the truck. And I'm like, wow, this is going to suck because they might be able to point out a few things, but I was wrong. Sade is a delivery specialist. She also drives a flatbed. So was able to deliver the vehicle. Then here you see me asking her, is it okay if I mic you? I'd like to go over the whole process. And she was a rock star. She did, I don't know if any of you guys watched the video, but man, she knew everything about the R1T. She took the time. She was at my house like 2 hours, went over everything. I asked questions that I even knew the answer. I wanted to see if she knew the answer. And I wanted to act like a typical Rivian person that's never driven the vehicle before, that has all kind of questions about how you use the infotainment, how you open the gear tunnel, the frunk and all that stuff. And so I recorded the whole thing, edited out a little bit of it. It's a more than an hour long video. And I recorded even, you know, every step of it, from me signing the documents, what you have to do when you first get the vehicle, then pairing your app with the vehicle and then going over all the functions and settings and so forth. So yeah, she was a rock star. And if you didn't watch that video, please check it out. Not just for the views for me, just so you'll see exactly what you get with a Rivian delivery. And I've had other followers reach out and say, you know, I had a similar experience. It was a fantastic delivery process. The person that came knew everything about the truck. It wasn't just like, here's your keys, here's a couple main items, and then, well, if you need to know more, go check out the Rivian website. You can learn everything there. No, the delivery specialists know everything about the vehicle inside and out. These people are super well-trained.
And did you check out the F-150 Lightning next to it out of curiosity?
No, she showed no interest whatsoever in the
Lightning. Brilliant. Yeah. The ultimate, like, taking the high road. Like, what even is that?
Yeah. And she showed no interest whatsoever in my garage. And I had the garage door open when she arrived. And you could see it's like a studio with all the chargers and everything. But it was just kind of like, all right, let's go over your R1T now. So, which was kind of cool. She was focused on doing the R1T.
Very professional. Very professional.
And I thought that was a great video. And I have to say, I had a totally different delivery style, but equally knowledgeable staff. Was really impressed always with Rivian staff.
Wow.
Yeah. She knew her stuff, which was really fantastic. And like I said, when I was really concerned when she pulled up, because I'm like, wow, like this is just somebody delivering it with a truck. Like they're going to drop it off in my driveway and say, here's your truck. Thank you. But no, like, you know, she knew her stuff.
That's the really interesting thing about Rivian building what they're building. And I think what a lot of people forget as well, which is just how brutally hard this is. They're not just building a car company. They're building an EV company, a tech company from scratch. Okay, been doing it 10 years, but still. And then even down to the level of the people that deliver your vehicle to be so knowledgeable about those vehicles, but also have a license to drive a flatbed truck, which in this country is an advanced test. And even that level of recruitment and you having such an amazing experience, this is, you know, and then on top of that, then your supplier goes, oh, we've got no semiconductor chips. You can't build any cars. You know, this is so hard for these companies to do. I don't want to let them off lightly. They're very well funded and there's a lot of people working there, but it's so interesting to hear you say that.
A friend of mine just picked up his R1T and brought it out here to Colorado. And actually, like, there's a batch of R1Ts that they had to go and fix something on. I guess they were worried about a bolt that came out of the factory for the upper control arm, which doesn't sound great. But anyway, they sent a mobile tech up to our house and he was so cool. And I thought the guy was really, really awesome. He came in, jacked up the truck, made sure the bolt was tight. I think it was. I don't know if he adjusted anything and then left. He was so nice. He had one of the Rivian service equipped R1Ts with the slide out service bay and everything. And he was totally pumped up about it. He was a viewer as well, which was great. So nice to see, you know, people working at the companies watching EV nerd videos. But everyone at Rivian I've spoken to is top notch.
And I really need to stop by Tom's place on the way through. I was trying to get back here in time for the hurricane in case it was coming here because we didn't know where it was hitting. I just realized now sitting here, I missed the chance not only to see his like F-150 Lightning, but also this Rivian of his. Oh, next time.
Not bad. Dominic, you should be able to schedule a first mile test drive, I think. Maybe you need to be a reservation holder. I don't know. But they are doing test drives of them.
Yeah, I should look into that then. That'd be cool.
Thank you very much, guys. I think we're probably to the end of our time. If Sade ever wants to come on the podcast when one of us takes holiday, she's very welcome. If she wants to come on and talk about EVs for an hour and a half.
Be awesome.
As a guest, that would genuinely be amazing. I imagine Rivian Corporate might not, or maybe they would. They seem pretty cool. But she's welcome anytime. Right, that's got to the end of where we are today. Guys, thank you so much for joining us once again. Normal service will be resumed next week when Dom's had a full week back from vacation to prepare the show and back on hosting duties. Thank you very much for watching today. Usual stuff. If you've just enjoyed this and you haven't hit the thumbs up button, then you should, because good things will happen to you. And also make sure you're subscribed to the channel. You can also get this show in audio form as well on all your podcast platforms. Just search Inside EVs. You can follow us all on social media. Twitter is probably the one that I think most of us are most active on. Tom, you are Tom Malog with two M's. Dominic, you are Dominic_Y. Kyle is It's Kyle Connor, and a bunch of Outer Spec channels as well, which you should be following. And also, I am at EV News Daily. You can check out my podcast every single day, 7 days a week, with the latest electric vehicle news. And we will be back in 7 days' time. Thank you very much for tuning in. Oh, Dom, if you could do me a favor and say ciao.
Ciao.